You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike Exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall President and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
Welcome. Show number 139 from our studio here in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, the Classic Auto Mall Show. My co-host, Steve, here. You have a good week?
Hello. Yeah. Excellent. You're awesome. Excellent week. There I am.
Excellent. If you all don't know it, Steve is now writing our descriptions, if you haven't heard us jabber about that for the past couple of months.
Been a busy week here at Classic Auto Mall. Yeah. Consignments.
So the consignments kind of slowed up a little bit right when you first started. So that was, you know.
Feeling good. How long have you been? Right. About 3 months.
So it slowed up a little bit right at the beginning. And then all of a sudden now it's kind of gotten back to normal where we're taking in 8 or 10 a day.
Right.
Are you okay?
Yeah. No, it's great. I'm really learning about a lot of different cars.
Well, it's amazing what you'll learn when you commit something to the written word.
Absolutely.
You know, you learn so much. And, of course, we're selling cars a lot too. No question about that. Where do we sell cars this past week? How about Dillsburg, Pennsylvania? How about Milford, Connecticut? Watchung, New Jersey? Northford, Connecticut? Wasion, Ohio? Gold Canyon, Arizona? Quincy, Massachusetts? New Hope, Pennsylvania? Waxhaw, North Carolina? Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania? I don't know. Pisac, North Dakota?
Never heard of it.
Me either. Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Haverford, Pennsylvania. Springfield, Virginia. Friendsville, Maryland. And Aubrey, Texas. So, another good week of sales. And of course, they're scattered all over the country, you know.
Absolutely.
We never know, you know. We try so hard to try to forecast and predict this business, and it's very difficult to do. You can't predict the consignments, and you can't predict the sales. It just seems to kind of happen, and there's spurts of things. And we talked about a couple of weeks ago where, you know, Model A Fords all of a sudden become popular again. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the market's dried up on those. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be. So, but anyway. We're thankful for all the consignments that come in. Keep them coming. Steve will just keep churning them out.
That's right.
You may have to quit your day job.
Wear a lot of hats here.
Wear a lot of hats. Absolutely. We've got a very special guest with us via Zoom. Randy Nonenberg, the co-founder and president of Bring a Trailer. Randy, good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here, guys.
Yeah, great to have you. We've been talking about having you on for a while, and you know how things get. It's always difficult to get everybody's schedule coordinated properly, and thankful that you could take the time. I'm sorry we had to get you up early, and if you're West Coast, I'm assuming, right? You're in
St. It's place. Okay. Yeah, I'm on the West Coast, but happy to be up and talking cars early in the morning. Yeah,
absolutely. We love talking cars, and that's you know, we decided if we were going to do something for a living, we might want to do something that surrounds around cars. And it's funny because I bring a trailer. I go into my guys' cubicles from time to time to check on them, and they'll quickly, you know, minimize the screen. I said, "You want to bring a trailer, weren't you?" Yes, they were. So, thank you and no thank you. You know, what's great about your site is we learn so much about a variety of cars. If we don't know something about a particular car that comes in on consignment and the consignor doesn't know a whole lot, then we generally reference your site and we can find one and at least say, oh yeah, that's what that's supposed to be anyway.
Yeah, a lot of people use Bring a Trailer as a resource. You know, we never really knew. This was all just sort of a grand experiment when we turned it on and started playing around and talking about cars and bringing in discussion and letting people transact on cars. And I mean, all of this just sort of evolved. And part of it, yeah, has become a meaningful, both a price resource for people because they can track pricing, but also discussion and expertise on all sorts of weird. If you need to know, you know, the years a Amphora car was, you know, painted a certain color or whatever. I mean, whatever your weirdo question might be, after this many cars, yeah, 150,000 cars going through VAT, the chances are the model you have a question about is going to be on there.
Wow. Well, I can only imagine you reading a list similar to what I just read for all the cars you sold. How many do you sell in a week on average?
So we now list about 125 per day, about 800, 850 a week, and we have about 80% sale rate. So yeah, 700, 750 cars sell every single week.
wow, that's a lot to keep up with, right? I mean, it's not nothing to keep up with everything.
Absolutely. And you talk about descriptions, right? The descriptions on BAT are very matter of fact, but they're pretty deep in terms of the details. And then, the galleries and everything else. There's a lot of info. But the big sort of calling card for BAT, and we've wanted it this way from the beginning, is everything is permanent. You know, I mean, everything, the thing that frustrated me about online sales in particular, when we were turning this thing on, was that, you know, a car would be listed for sale and then you go back tomorrow and it was gone. And you'd be like, what happened? Did it sell? Did it get totaled? Did it, did the internet turn off? Like what happened?
Yeah.
And so, some sort of permanence of a record of what was happening was always super important to me. So yeah, all 150,000 of those are still on the page and you can go load them and, you know, read about cars that transacted in 2014 or earlier.
Right. Well, so you have a computer bank that's as big as my whole, you know, place here, I would imagine. You know, terabytes and terabytes are not even in the gigabyte, whatever the next one is. I don't even know. And of course you want people to, you encourage people to send as many pictures as they possibly can, right? I mean, you don't want them to send 10, you want 110.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think the average these days is like close to 200 on a car, which is crazy. But most of these people, like you say, you read off these towns where people are buying your cars. Most people are doing it long distance.
Yeah.
Some people are doing it in person, but the norm now is for people to be figuring out how they can get comfortable, whether they have to send a person or whether they have to just get comfortable with the online listing and the seller themselves. Most people are doing it that way. They're not flying, you know, right, six time zones over to go inspect a AMC Javelin or whatever, you know, we needed to figure out a way to make the listing stand on its own so that people had more confidence in doing that. And that's what we try to do.
Our goal in, descriptions and comments from our customers from long distance is the car was a little bit nicer than you described. If we hit that, then we've hit our sweet. If it's a lot nicer, we let money on the table. And if it's not as nice, we buy it to them. And the problem that you run into with old cars is exactly that, old cars. So everything's perfect. The car goes onto the trailer here. It goes in the cocoon to Southern California. And three things are wrong when it gets there that weren't wrong with it when it left here. And that's hard to overcome and hard to explain to a customer because it sounds like salesman speak when you say that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the dance of sort of under describing a car, we've often been accused of, you're like, well, you're not hyping up the car enough, right? And it's like, well, if you hype up the car, you get into problems, right? Yeah. And it's not a good place to stand and to have a long-term sort of business. If you want just, you know, you're popping up and you're selling cars today and you're going to be gone tomorrow, like that's an okay way to do it. But if you over promise and under deliver on customers time after time, you're going to have problems. But yeah, moving metal around the country and around the world, really, about how people are buying cars now, you just have to be really thoughtful about, photos beforehand. You know, you ask about, how many hundreds of photos? Well, it's good to get them just sort of as a documentation trail. Sure. So when somebody says, hey, it showed up and it's got a scratch in the quarter, and you say, well, look at the full foot, like that either was here or wasn't here, you know, 4 weeks ago. So it's sort of a recording of a moment in time as well. And it's a good way to go about it to make sure everybody stays happy.
It's very difficult. And we really, really push hard to get our clients to look at all the pictures and read all the description. And it's very easy for a guy to see one picture, read the first paragraph, and all of a sudden he's making an offer on a car that he really hasn't seen. And he said, you know, how's that undercarriage? You know, and nothing frustrates me more for a guy to ask a question than I clearly have stated in the first paragraph something to that question. You know, it's got a 350 V8 in it. What size motor's that got in it? Like, oh God. You know, and of course that was the old days of eBay. You know, you're talking about, you know, you put something out there online. And if you didn't know something, you could just put it out on eBay and some expert eventually would find you and tell you what it was, right?
Yep, absolutely. And finding a way for that to be more trustworthy was super important, right? Because any place where the seller can just kind of say whatever they want about the car, you obviously know that there's going to be some sort of verification that's necessary about that. And what has really changed sort of the landscape and the number of bidders and that sort of thing on BAT and the reach is that when there is, you know, a group of people that'll stand around you. Like when you're looking at a car, if you could have like four, four or five experts on that model standing behind you talking, you know, chattering about the car. Wow. That sure gives you a whole bunch more information that you can rely on. So, it's just a different way of raising confidence in what's being said about a car for sale, which, as you know, yeah, you go look at a Craigslist ad on a car and you're like, okay, well, 30% of this is right. 70% is wrong. And, you know, who knows what path we're being taken down. So that sort of validity, was something we were really after, and basically how we designed the thing from the ground up.
Well, basically what you have is your neighbor who's the Chevelle expert, online telling you what's right or wrong about the particular Chevelle you're looking at, or the Mustang or whatever. Would it be fair to say that you thought this would be a curated version of eBay? Is that stretching the thought of what it would be?
Somewhat. I mean, curation is one component of it. We don't accept every car, right? And so if there's a car with sketchy paperwork, or if there's a car where, you know, things just don't sort of add up, this doesn't sound right. The guy's saying, you know, it's a 75 and it's, everybody knows it's a 71, you know, and the pay, you know, everything's, it's three cars welded together and all that sort of stuff that I'm sure you guys see all the time.
Sure.
And a lot of people do in online ads and the car world in general. So we curate out those sort of things, but it's also, eBay and other online, sites, like there's a lot of just sort of shortcomings in how it works, right? Down to how the bidding works, down to how you view the photos, down to the, you know, how the commission structure works, right? Like one of the biggest challenges with, sales online or offline is follow through, right? So we had to build it in a way that encouraged the right behavior, right? And so we fine tuned that and worked on that such that the ultimate goal is for the car to transact, not just for it to show sold on the internet or whatever, right? And that a lot of those sites we, you would find obviously on eBay and others, you would find a car sold and then, oh wait, it's for sale 5 minutes later again.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and so engineering that out of the system by charging people the right amount and engaging people in the right way and verifying identities the proper way and doing things that are not part of other platforms. So there's the curation part, which is super important, which you mentioned, but there's so many other components to make a car actually transact and have a vibrant discussion around it and distribute it to the right people. Yeah. So anyway, I can go on for hours and hours, but there's quite a few differences, but curation is super important because the mix of cars is what brings people back.
Sure. And in all fairness, and not to keep harping on eBay, but eBay's bread and butter is not cars. eBay's bread and butter is tchotchkes and a lot of other things. And they have limitations on what you do and how you pay and all that good stuff. And one of the things that scares me about this, maybe you can touch on this. My fear is this escrow situation, you know, people want to say, okay, we're going to ship the car to California from Pennsylvania, and you're going to put the money in an escrow. And if the car is not what we thought it was, then we're not going to pay the seller, and you're going to get the car. You got to get the car. It's like, is that too much fine tuning of the process?
You may be talking about, broader escrow.com type services or some other websites are rolling different things out. We have our own custom solution for that. But yeah, people have pushed like, oh, Randy, you ought to have escrow services on BAT for a long time. And with cars, that gets interesting, right? Because you're not just, you know, shipping a coin purse across the country that you just return it to Amazon and everybody's happy, right?
Right.
It's like, if you're moving a car for a couple thousand dollars across the country, there can't be this like, well, maybe I want it, maybe I don't. Like it needs to be a very solid and firm and reliable sale for both the buyer and the seller.
Okay.
And so, yeah, our solution for that is called Verified Checkout. And so we've figured out a way that, one of the main heartaches for folks is like actually transferring the money, particularly to a private party.
Right.
You guys are in the dealer world and people know you have a brick and mortar and know you're, you know, doing your podcasts all the time and you're sort of a recurring, reliable player.
Right.
And there's many dealers like that and that's good. But again, if you're sending $50,000 to a private party in South Florida that you've never met other than an email, that sounds terrifying, right? I mean, that's like, that's crazy. And so no matter how legitimate and thorough the listing is, that sort of money transaction part is tricky. And so we found a way to do that, through identity verification on both sides and through secure payment sort of holding all the way through the process. Like we launched a service for that. But yeah, escrow is not always the right way to do it just because of what you talked about earlier. Yeah. You know, the car came and now it drips, but you didn't say it drips. And then you get, there's so many components to a collector car or even a modern car. It's really hard to hold the parties accountable through escrow dynamics.
Sure.
So we we do it through, different types of verification on BAT that are working out really well and help people do their paperwork as well.
Sure. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Randy Nonnenberg from the co-founder and president of Bring a Trailer. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
You are invited on a safari at Classic Auto Mall on a search for animals. Look closely and you might see a tiger, jaguar, and a cheetah or cougar as they try to catch a herd of impalas. And don't forget the wild mustangs and broncos, plus gazelle, rabbits, and rams. Instead of the zoo, you'll want to do your animal watching at Classic Auto Mall. It smells better, too.
Call J.C. Taylor today for a competitive quote on collector car insurance. Give your most prized possessions the attention that they deserve. You'll receive agreed value coverage, giving you the peace of mind to know you're always protected. J.C. Taylor has been supporting the hobby with reliable service that has lasted for 6 decades. Call 888-ANTIQUE or visit jctaylor.com/AWR to get a quote today. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/AWR. Drive through time with peace of mind. JC Taylor.
Hey folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday 1 to 2, only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember folks, I'm not angry, I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall show from the Classic Auto Mall studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. And talking to our friend Randy Nonnenberg from Bring a Trailer. Randy, we were talking off there about German cars. You and I both have an affliction, I guess, or whatever you want to call it for those. You seem to love Porsches, though. I get the feeling you're a Porsche guy, and is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all over the map. My tastes are, 100 miles wide, just like the website. But I do like, I've had a couple of Porsches. I don't own one currently, but one of my sort of darling cars was a, 356 that I had when I, started the website, and that was kind of featured prominently on the website. But I'm also, Alfa Romeo guy, and I have a, Chrysler 300B, 56 Chrysler 300B, big Hemi. Nice. 50s car, and then I like trucks, and I mean, I'm schizophrenic. That's why I like your guys' inventory, right? I scroll your guys' inventory, and you guys are kind of all over the map.
Yeah.
And, that's what makes cars fun for me is I'm not totally one to go to a single mark Concours, a single mark car show. Like I like going to a car event where it's like super smattering of everybody all over, and the Datsun guys are trying to figure out how to talk to the Ford guys who are trying to figure out how to get along with the Porsche guys or whatever, like that energy and, variance is what gets me out of bed in the morning. I love that.
Sure. And I don't get to do quite as much of that as I do now because some of my job is now not really car related. It's marketing and spreadsheets and financials and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, gotta stay away from that stuff.
I'm trying. I really am trying, Well, and for those that don't know, you took on a partner in 2020. Was this right in the middle of the pandemic? You got a new partner?
My goodness. We had what we thought was a huge banner year in 2019.
Right.
So what was it? $230 million worth of cars or something crazy like that. Right. And we're like, okay, those are the kind of, when you're a, NBA ball player or whatever, you put up a great season and then you kind of turn on the telephone a little bit and let people call in and see what's going on. We had, some suitors and people that wanted to get involved in BAT for a long time. And frankly, we needed some help. The rocket ship was going really fast, but the bolts were kind of coming apart as we were in mid flight and we were like, oh man, we could use some support. So sure. That was a great year, but nobody knew that, March of that, 2020, like things were going to go crazy and unstable and nobody, everybody was going to change their lifestyle. Some, in many different ways, frankly. Sure. So we were putting these conversations together in December, Jan, Feb, right before that was happening. And actually committed to take on a meaningful shareholder and majority investor right around that time frame and move forward with that. And it has worked out tremendously well for us, but that was tricky timing.
Sure, absolutely. Well, we we locked our doors and started to walk away and thought this was fun while it lasted. And the phone kept, right? You got that Mustang for sale. You got this. And we realized two things. People were still online and trucking companies were still considered an essential business. So we continued to sell. It was a skeleton crew. It was me and my wife and my son. And we got down to the bare bones and said, okay, we're going to get through this. And thinking that we weren't going to get through it. Of course, you got a partnership with the company that the three of the magazines they own were my Bibles growing up, Auto Week, Road and Track, and Car and Driver. How cool is that? I mean, that's pretty significant.
Yeah. I mean, we were a Road and Track family growing up. My dad had the Road and Track subscription and I was the kid that would walk out to the mailbox, you know, every first week of the month and get out there and I'd get the new, you know, Peter Egan article and I'd get the new, reviews of all my dream cars when I was a little kid. And it really sort of shaped me. Paper print magazines were a super important and vibrant part pre-internet in particular. And they've evolved and it's a different business now, but still those brands, I mean, Road and Track copy, we thankfully now have access to the entire Road and Track and Car and Driver and Auto Week archives now that we're affiliated with Hearst and we pepper that in on Bring a Trailer because there's a lot of amazing reviews, right? If you're going to go buy a 65 Mustang, you can get the original 65 road test and photos and all that sort of stuff. All right there on the listing on BAT. And that sort of brings a smile to my face because that brings memories back of, you know, 80s supercars that I was reading about when I was a little kid. And those brands have, you know, even though magazine business has evolved so much, those brands have kind of stood the test of time because of the hours and hours that people spent on those, in their youth or decades ago. Sounds like you did too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, what was interesting, talking about the evolution of online to Bring a Trailer, the evolution of the rear classifieds in Road and Track and in the Rob Report became the DuPont Registry, which when that came out, no different than I felt when I found about what you were doing. I was like, I should have thought of that. Why wasn't I thinking of that? You know, make a whole magazine of those classifieds. You know, make a curated version of these online auction sites and put it out there. So, you know, hats off to you for figuring that out, however that came to be.
Yeah, I mean, that the internet introduced some crazy dynamics to things, but basically everything was so scattered all over the place. All these magazines were trying to figure out, dealers like yourself were trying to figure out. This is, call it early 2000s, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And when you were coming on, you were looking for cars. You're like, man, there's cars hidden all over the place, and nobody knows how to do this. And everybody's doing it different. It was really the Wild West. And my favorite hobby, I mean, I say all the time, I didn't read enough books. I didn't watch TV really. I would just hunt around online, you know, in the evenings looking for cars that I didn't have any money to buy, but I was, you know, scanning inventories and watching all this stuff. And I just loved it. It was something was very different for me, than, you know, reading just a review of a car was reading a listing for a car that was for sale. Like there was some attainable component of it. Like I could buy that, right? If I had the dough, I could buy that right now. And that has an electricity around it much more than, you know, this car magazine ranks it a 9 out of 10 or whatever. I didn't really care what they ranked it. What I cared was that it was down the street and it was for sale. Right. And so that sort of stuff, was interesting, but there was no good formula. And again, the listings were of very low quality and suspect credibility and all sort. It was like treasure hunting. So yeah, that's what started BAT in 2007. We turned it on to try to just sort of share all that stuff that I was finding because I was burying hours and hours, you know, searching around the internet for cars I wasn't going to buy anyway. So I might as well tell you about it and everybody about it.
And if you could afford it, then you could go buy it. And then
yeah,
live vicariously through you, right? Well, I worked for eBay Cruise back in the early 2000s when they were trying to take the brick and mortar of eBay or Cruise into the online of eBay. And it was a task, you know, and a lot of guys were very, you know, very reluctant to do anything online. And of course, now you can't live without online, no matter what type of business you're in.
Yep, absolutely. But it's great that you were there. I mean, those were wild times, right? That was like an experiment. People were like, wow, eBay is going to buy, you know, coordinate with Cruise and try to do auctions. And what the heck is going on? I mean, there was a new idea every month, right? And some of them worked and a lot of them didn't. And that was sort of the experimentation phase. And I think we're later than that now, right? We've seen some models work and, innovation in America is a fun thing to watch, right? And so many businesses have evolved and some succeed and some don't, but you figure out like how to put your shoulder to a new idea and see what happens. And the kind of cars we were talking about, and again, that permanence and sort of reliability of the listings was a huge pain point for people.
Sure.
And that ended up sort of winning the day. And it encourages me. People ask all the time, like, oh, you stole all the good, you ruined Craigslist. You stole all the good cars from Craigslist. And I was like, well, I guess it was, you know, it was a better mousetrap. There's some reason people are submitting their cars, you know, by the hundreds to BAT instead of other places. And so I kind of feel bad that some of my early, hobbies of hunting around those, a lot of sites have sort of dried up on some good cars, but the better presentation sort of rule the day these days.
Well, I love it when a guy tells me he's going to put his car on Facebook Marketplace before, or, you know, even Craigslist before he brings it here, because I just know what's going to happen. He calls me 3 days later and says, oh my God, turn my phone off. Stop it. People are driving me crazy. You know, everybody wants to do this and they want you to do this kind of deal. There's no credibility and you don't know who's calling you. You know, the beauty of what you've done is you've curated both sides of the transaction. You've curated the merchandise and the seller, and you've curated the buyer too, because you got competition coming at you every day, but nobody's even coming close to what you guys are doing because, A, you're probably first to the table, or you were first to the table in a lot of respects. B, you've got the credibility. And C, you know, I can't imagine. I bet your page views are more in an hour than I get in a month.
Yeah, page views on auction's a crazy thing, right? And auction is sort of a circus to watch. It's very different than just posting an inventory, right?
Right.
But it's a different sort of horse race, right? It's a different deal. Both have their value, right? People are like, oh, Randy, are you going to put the tent auctions out of business? And I was like, that's not really the goal. Like,
no.
I think they have their model, and there's people that like to go there and be in the tent and, you know, drink booze and like have a good time with their friends. It's like an experiential thing. And then they're like, oh, are you going to put dealers out of business? And I was like, I hope not. Right. I mean, there are some people that are very, suspect of dealers Randy, you shouldn't let dealers list on BAT.
Right.
And what I say to that is we should let the good dealers list on BAT, and we should let the terrible dealers not list on BAT or be shown to be terrible dealers on BAT, right? Because it's your behavior and how you interact with people and how willing you are to answer questions. All of that stuff bubbles to the top on BAT, like in the first 5 minutes. So if it's, I'm like good behavior, we love rewarding good behavior. And I'm a firm believer that there are some great car dealers, you know, many of whom I consider friends out there. And so people saying, oh, you know, carte blanche, you shouldn't accept dealer cars. I'm like, you're crazy. There's great cars that I don't know how some of these dealers find these inventory, but they find them. And I'm encouraged to include the good behavior on BAT, but it's also what you got to do is the people that are, you know, snakes and sharks and terrible folks, which are out there. We all know are out there. You got to make sure those people don't last and get sent back, packing, because those are the people that are a problem for reliability of transaction.
Well, and it hurts your credibility more than it hurts theirs. You know, a bad dealer on Bring a Trailer hurts his credibility less than it hurts Bring a Trailer's credibility. And you've got to get through that. But you're right. I mean, listen, if try to source all these cars, I mean, just for me to get 1,000 cars in the building, you know, it just doesn't happen. You know, and the one thing that we have done a little differently than most dealers is we'll take the lower end stuff, but we're brutally honest about it. We show every rust hole. We show every flaw. Everything that we can show you good and or bad about the car gets shown. And that way, hopefully, we'll mitigate some of the, you know, the guy getting the car and being disappointed or something being different than what he anticipated.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and that didn't used to be the way, right? No. I mean, there's some, and still isn't for a lot of dealers, right? That just want to show the shiny parts or again, hype the car a whole bunch, which is just something that drives me crazy. So, I love just the facts, ma'am. You know, I mean, just give us the facts and the people can decide if it's the best one ever, right? I mean, so many listings out there say, this is the most spectacular Mustang 2 in existence, right? And you're like, oh man, we're going down the wrong road here.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it's kind of funny to watch that, But your guys' inventory is extensive. You say it's hard to get, you know, big volume of cars. I consider you guys to be very high volume.
Well, we are. It's just difficult. Yeah. You know, to get that many cars and to make people listen, it's one thing to bring a car to an auction for 3 days and then you take it home. It's another thing to commit to 90 days in my building, in my world, your car's out of your control. That's a little tougher avenue. And of course we fell into, if you will, one of the greatest collector car feeder markets in the whole world is right here almost. I mean, this is in the top probably 5 or 10 of feeder markets in the collector car world right here in Southeast Pennsylvania. It's amazing.
I love that. My dad's from Pennsylvania, so I've got sort of family ties to PA. And we are close with an event there in Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix, which you probably know about at Shenley Park in Pittsburgh. We're coming out to participate in that again this year. That area of the country, there's, vibrancy around stuff hidden in people's garages. As you well know, you draw a circle around where you guys are, and there's a lot of folks hunting for cars and a lot of folks on BET, frankly, in that whole region, which we hold it very, very dear.
Absolutely. Hey, you got time to join us for one more segment, Randy?
You bet. I'd be happy.
All right. Sounds great. We'll be back with the Classic Auto Mall show in just a minute. We'll see you then.
The Classic Auto Mall is like going to the greatest indoor car showroom in the country. With more than 1,000 classic and collectible vehicles for sale via consignment in our 8-acre climate-controlled showroom, we've got something for everyone. We're open to the public most days. Plus, you can easily search our inventory online at classicautomall.com. Buying and selling via consignment is safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Find your dream classic vehicle at classicautomall.com.
When it comes to car magazines, are you tired of reading about mega-dollar collector cars you can't afford, or endless reporting on auctions and how-to tech stories that don't interest you? Then Crankshaft is the car magazine for you. Crankshaft is a 144-page softcover quarterly filled with all sorts of fascinating stories, the type of car features you won't find anywhere else. It features American and foreign cars, pre- and post-war era cars of distinction including sports cars, muscle cars, and regular family sedans too. To discover what many car enthusiasts are saying is the best car magazine ever published, you can purchase either a single copy for $12.95 plus $3 postage, or a one-year subscription, 4 issues, for $59.95. To order your copy, go to www.crankshaftmagazine.com. That's www.crankshaftmagazine.com.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
We're back with the Classic Auto Mall show from the Classic Auto Mall studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, talking to Randy Nonnenberg from Bring a Trailer, joining us from via Zoom in San Francisco. How's the weather out there today?
We're doing great, man. We're spring has sprung and it's blue skies. We're just can't complain.
Always blue skies around there. So Bring a Trailer now is in, well, you started in 2007, but when did you actually start doing the auction format side?
We're about to hit 10 years of auction. So the auctions turned on in July of 2014.
Right. And was it an instant success? I know that that's not maybe necessarily possible, but I mean, was it instantly like, this is going to work? You knew it.
No, I mean, it was an experiment and we didn't know if anybody was going to trust this, you know, young upstart of these guys with this website and this audience. If auctions was even going to function. First of all, was the software that we built going to function? We had to get that to work first. And then was the sort of adoption and use of it going to work? And we didn't know. So what we did was we actually seeded it with our own cars, went out and bought, and you're probably familiar with this, is sort of a dealer model almost, is we went out and bought 10 cars that we thought were cool and ran them as the test case, because I wasn't going to tell you, hey, put your 57 Chevy on my brand new auction that I invented yesterday, right? I mean, people are like, I'm not going to do that, right? And so we anticipated a skepticism, and there's very open discussion on BAT, and that thread still lives. When we announced our auctions, there were 50% of people that said, you're crazy. We don't need another auction. This is a terrible idea. You're going to ruin Bring a Trailer. You know, I'm leaving, all this crazy stuff. And the other half, maybe half, was like, well, give it a shot, guys. See what happens. Like, we'll sit here and watch and judge from the sidelines. And so we had to fight some battles there in the first few months and then first couple of years. And nobody believed that people would buy different types of cars, you know. And as we started to gain success in call it 50 grand and under cars, people are like, well, this will never work on a car that's 75 grand. This will never work on a car that's 80 grand. right? And now, as you've seen, I mean, people are transacting online up to many six figure and some seven figure cars, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And, but it was all just an experiment. So we weren't sitting there telling people, yes, this is going to work. Yes, this is going to work. We were just sort of experimentalists, and we said, let's see if it works, you know, sure. Because I like a capped 5% fee a whole lot more than I like the Bear Jackson fees, you know?
Sure.
So let's see if it works, folks. Yeah. And, people started to like it. And so we had to fine tune it. It's the product of, you know, thousands of small improvements every single day, but that's how it's gotten to where people want it.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head. Seems like there's room for everybody in this business. You know, people were worried about, you know, Mecum auction, and people worried about Bear Jackson, and they're worried about this and the regional auctions and, oh, this new online and this and this. Seems to be everybody's doing pretty well that does business in the proper way.
Yeah, you find that. I mean, I kind of like it when the good guys win. Any business where like the good guys win, right? And car sales, as you well know, you have to battle this. And we have this conversation at every cocktail party, right? Which is like, used car sales has a terrible reputation.
Oh, awful.
And most of it is very well earned, right? By a bunch of problems and personalities and different sorts of things. So yeah, to figure out a way for the business to have sort of a positive halo around it by doing business with good ethics in the proper way and with lower fees that aren't predatory and, you know, just doing it in a way that people like. It turns out like people want to rally around that and support that. We got, you know, we've never really spent on marketing. We just rely on people saying, hey, BAT is a good thing for the hobby. Right. And so that's how we got a really long way down the road. And, that's been encouraging to be bolstered by enthusiasts in that sort of way.
Sure. And you get, I mean, the cool thing about Bring a Trailer is you get lots of well-known guys in the hobby, well-known guys in, you know, sports and entertainment world, and everybody comes to the table. But I love the fact that you guys have a charity element as well, too. Like some of the big auction houses do, which I've always loved, and I always thought was so great that they were giving back. And even though it's probably the highest ratings that they get for their television show, the time when they do the charity stuff, it still goes without, you know, saying that it's important to do that. And I know you did the Datsun 240Z for Piston Foundation. We just had Jeff Mason on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and we're now sponsors of the Piston Foundation as well, too. But I know that's kind of near and dear to you guys as well, too. The Datsun 240Z, that was an awesome auction.
That was listing them number 100,000 for us, which was a really big deal. That was a mountain that we had to climb for some years to get to 100,000 listings. And that was a special car, right? Like, I spec'd that car. I found that car. I drove that car. Our team drove that car in a bunch of events. That car went to Mexico and drove events.
Like, yeah.
I drove that car from San Francisco all the way to Road Atlanta and got to drive it on track in Atlanta. Yeah, man, that car covered. It was kind of our signature car for a good long while. And that's a good model. I know you've had those in inventory, and those cars saw a lot of visibility and run up on BAT because people sort of rediscovered them. And so that was a good one for us to do. And yeah, the Piston Foundation collaboration, obviously, I feel like they're the good guys too. If you talk about the good guys winning, like what the fight those guys are fighting in terms of empowering, you know, young folks that are learning the trades and people that need support in their schooling. I mean, these are all the good reasons to get out of bed in the morning and to be part of the car community. And so it was very easy for us to select, you know, an alignment with them. And we knew we wanted to sell that car, but we weren't celebrating our 100,000th car and, you know, make a bunch of money for ourselves. We were kind of like, hey, who can we give some good visibility to? And we were able to, yeah, every cent of that car went to them from our side. And that car sold for, I think, double, at least maybe triple its value. It sold for $125,000. And all of that went to Piston. And that they've told us, like, these are the individuals whose lives have been improved and changed by that. I mean, how cool is that? Right. I mean, that gives some meaning to what we're all doing here.
No question about it. And we're all charged with that in this hobby, is to bring the young people involved, not let the hobby die, not let, you know, internal combustion engines go completely away. Not, you know, there's all this stuff that, you know, whether we want it or not, this is important for us to maintain this. We've got to do whatever we can to keep that going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like turning wrenches here and there, but I can't work on everything. And we're reliant on people that can keep these vehicles going. We can keep the visibility maybe, or talk about this, or be excited to own them or transact them or that sort of thing. But that's only a small part of
sure.
the whole equation here. So yeah, keeping a, you know, four barrel running on a V8 in perfect ways, or needing to rebuild that engine, or needing to restore that car A to Z. Like, there are craftsmen out there that we need, and people that are retiring from that part of the business that need to be replaced by young, excited, hungry folks that don't, you know, want to work in a law firm. They want to go do some other, you know, more hands-on stuff. And that's a great path, and that's exciting. And, so being able to support that has been, meaningful for us. And we've tried too, in other things we're doing on Bring a Trailer, just in terms of the inventory, in terms of how the discussion goes, in terms of how we engage partners and sponsorships and things like that, just to be bringing in a new segment of readers and people that are watching. We have all the time, you may get this too, but we get this a ton, is people are like, well, I never would have felt comfortable buying an old car unless I found it on BAT, because I was always scared of Facebook, and I was always scared of big auctions. And there was like fear or discomfort out there with a lot of the industry in terms of buying your first collector car, whatever that may be. And so we've tried to kind of throw the gate wide open and let people feel more comfortable with that. So we get a ton of like first timers, like, oh, I have all modern Porsches, but I decided to buy a BMW 2002 because of your community and the way they talked about this car, right? And that broadens the market. That broadens, you know, that person's going to put that in their garage and tell all their friends about it, right? Which is good for your business and good for our business and good for the longevity. So that sort of positive ripple effect is, I think, it's going to be good long term.
Me too. And I see, no different than you, I see ambassadors to our business that come in walking through the front door. They're dragging five guys with them. They're telling everybody about how the process works at Classic Auto Mall. You get the same thing because your guys who are the experts give credibility to Bring a Trailer. When the guy says, you know, there's no better place to buy a car, and this is why you should buy this car. And man, they're like your sales reps, right?
Yeah, and that's great. And but that's how every business should be, right? I mean, if you serve a good hamburger, like that person in your restaurant, you go tell all their friends, right? And right. So we've always tried to, yeah, if you deliver a, you know, with integrity and a high level of service, like that certainly reverberates in the marketplace. And if you treat people terribly, eventually it should come back and bite you, right?
So there's some people I wish you would get, but you know,
it never seems to get some people, right? I mean, some people seem to slide through.
I want to live long enough to see some people get their due.
No names need to be mentioned. No names mentioned.
Whatsoever. And of course, you know, your site is amazing because, as you said, it's almost car. It's like you pick the cars that are on your site for me. And that's hard to do because I like a little bit of everything too. But I mean, the 935 Porsche comes to mind, that the Interscope Racing replica went on there, 1.6 million. Man, that car, talk about getting your blood boiling.
Those are crazy. We were just talking about those on, in our office yesterday. I mean, our office is similar to yours. Our team is built of a bunch of car crazy folks.
Sure.
We were talking about those 935 spec cars, and there's a few of them, and a couple of them showed up at a show in Los Angeles this last weekend, and people were huddling around them talking about them, and yeah, referencing the ones that sold on BAT. It's so funny. You're at a show and people, like you say, we'll pull up like the BAT history on all these cars and be like, well, one of those sold on BAT 3 months ago and blah, blah. It's like part of the conversation now, which is crazy. I never thought it would be like that, but it's fun to hear that story,
sure,
after the fact.
Yeah. It's amazing when that happens, and it makes you feel good that you're spreading the gospel and doing a good job of it. And the other one that cracked me up recently was the 65 Lincoln limo that, our buddy sold on your site. That thing went crazy money. I mean,
was that a buddy of yours?
Well, Wayne, you know.
Yeah.
But man, and then, you know, what's interesting is that car, I mean, you got to expect, if you were going to put a number on that car, it had to be no more than $65,000, right? That's about what that thing should do, right?
Man. You would think, but man, you never know when people are going to get, you know, emotionally attached and just totally put the gloves on and go for it, you know? Right. I mean, but the trick about that one, and you see this all the time as well, which is, you know, you're going to wait for the next one. Like, if you don't win that one, like being second place and upset on that one, you can't tell yourself, well, I'll wait till the next one's going to come up, because when's it going to be? I don't know. We're all going to be old and gone by the time another one of those becomes available. So when they're one-offs like that, it really is a good auction dynamic, and sometimes it can end up with a result like that.
Sure. And of course, the Cybertruck was an interesting one as well too. Those things have kind of come and gone. I mean, it's almost like they're on the downward hill just as quick as they were on the upward hill, right?
Well, people, this is, I mean, human behavior is so fascinating to watch in this whole deal. But the, yeah, things that are brand new and shiny and nobody can get them, that's also a very interesting, you know, auction item. And so people early on the list on any model, Cybertruck, on the, you know, different, the Broncos when they first came out,
sure.
On any fancy, new thing that gets a lot of publicity. If people, you know, spin it through an auction very quickly, they can get some sort of return on their investment. And, Cybertruck was like that. And I think there was a window there where they were getting a big premium, but then the factory sort of caught up with the demand that's out there. And so now that, I mean, I don't know about where you are, but out here we see those, vehicles driving down the road, which is a crazy thing, but it's, I think it's kind of catching up. And so I think the big, you know, double your money promises of a bunch of people early on the list are fleeting, and we sold a couple of them like that, but then I think that dream is over for most people.
I think so as well, too. Randy, this has been a delight, and I would love, love, love to do this again. I hope you'll come back on the show one of these days and we can continue our conversation.
I would love to, and I'd love to come on through town and see your guys' operation when I'm out in that neck of the woods.
We'd love to have you, and thanks again. We appreciate you being on the show. We'll be back with the Classic Auto Mall show in just a minute.
The Classic Auto Mall is located not far from Audubon, Pennsylvania, named after James Audubon, the famous ornithologist. And there's probably no better place for bird watching. Look there, a flock of thunderbirds. Of course, who doesn't love the powerful firebirds? Studebaker lark and hawks, Buick skylarks, plus AMC eagle, and the difficult-to-catch roadrunner. Oh, there's no better place for bird watching than Classic Auto Mall.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than six decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/awr. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/awr. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
What will Victor say next? Find out every Tuesday at 1 p.m. on the On Point with Victor show, only on America's Web Radio.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
We're back with the Classic Auto Mall show from the Classic Auto Mall studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. What a great gift.
Yeah, that was amazing.
I have 27 pages left to talk to.
Sure you do.
And just so many questions, and, you know, there's so little time. And, you know, you just, it's funny how you get somebody on the show like that, that you just, I checked off one thing off the list, and then we went for 45 minutes.
Yeah, between the two of you, you have a lot to talk about. And then the, consider the hobby and the business itself.
It's, sure. It's,
you could talk for days.
And what they have built is phenomenal.
It's amazing. I mean, did they say 800 a month? 800 a week?
800 a week is how many they list.
Okay.
Yeah, they did $1.3 billion last year in sales.
Yeah.
And they have 1.2 million registered users, and they sold 30,000 cars last year.
Wow, that's amazing.
New arrivals that we have this week, the 1970 Plymouth AAR Cuda hardtop, Toured over black, which Toured is short for orange.
Good. I'm glad you said that because, yeah.
Am I missing something?
It's very reddish orange.
Well, carousel red on a GTO is the same way. It's more orange than it is red.
It is orangish red.
Yeah. 47,000 actual miles. It's got a correct 340 cubic inch six pack V8 and a correct A727 torque black automatic. And what do we mean by correct? As we always say, it's correct for the car, but it's not the original too, which is okay. Listen, these cars were driven hard and put up wet. Mostly original interior, all original metal, nicely restored. Plymouth back in the day hired Dan Gurney's All-American Racers in California to build a Trans Am Cuda. AAR, All-American Racers, hence the name. I don't know. There's something about an AAR Cuda that gets people excited, even if you're a jaded car guy. It's seen everything.
Yeah. And I know that it fits like pony car slash muscle car. It is a quintessential muscle car. Yeah. It really is.
And people go, oh, it's only got a 340 in it.
Yes.
Only? How about a 302 and a DZ302 Z28? Only 302? How about a 289 and a Mustang K-Code?
Right. Plus the all the exterior parts of it. Yeah. Are just tough-looking car.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it really. And nicely restored. It's very well done. Mm-hmm. Love that car. And then something completely different. The 1949 Studebaker Commando Regal Deluxe 16A convertible. It's the longest name in the history of
things. Sure is.
Black over Oxblood.
Mm-hmm.
One of 1,702 built. This is really an unusual car. When's the last time you saw a Studebaker Regal convertible? You just don't see them. You see hardtop and four-door Studebakers. You see a lot of that, but you don't very often see a late 40s or 50s Studebaker convertible. We had a Lark, or have a Lark here, that is a convertible as well, but you just very rarely see them. And it's got a 226L head inline six, and it's a stunning color combination.
Yeah, even Bill was impressed with this one.
Yeah, yeah, it's
because we own it in here. Nice car.
And when you get that stamp of approval from Bill, he's talking about jaded car guy.
Yeah,
you know.
Sees them all.
But we all are somewhat jaded in some respects because we, you know, we've seen it all, we've done it all.
Sure.
We've done. That's not true because there are still things that come in this door and there's still things that I see on Bring a Trailer that I go, oh,
sure.
Oh, look at that. Gosh, I'm watching Bring a Trailer right now. Uh-huh. I'm just scrolling through this Vincent Black Shadow motorcycle and a Lancia Fulvia.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just a LaSalle town sedan, which is kind of unusual for Bring a Trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Studebaker Commander Regal, if you get a chance, all of these cars are on our website, classicautomall.com. Next up is the 1969 Lincoln Continental Mark III. You've seen that poster in my hallway that goes to the
I sure have.
The guy with the aviator glasses. Yep. The cool, sophisticated guy in 1969 drove a Lincoln Continental Mark III. Not only did the cool, sophisticated guy drive it, our buddy Elvis Presley drove it.
Sure,
you know,
sure
he drove one, and that was one bad boy car. When you saw that black hair and that.
Yeah, it was black on black. Yeah. It was triple black.
Triple black on vinyl.
Vinyl with the black leather seats and black, and he has several.
Yeah, this is black over black, 54,000 actual miles, got the correct 460 VA, probably been replaced at some point in time. Sinister black on black. This was a luxury sports car back then. That big 460 would move it down the road, but it was no spring chicken. It was heavy. I mean, it was not light by any stretch of the imagination, but it was a very classy car back in the day. And of course, black was the without question, the best color. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say that.
It's true.
Go out there.
It's amazing how heavy the metal, how thick the metal is on cars of that era, too. And that's the other thing that always impresses me with that.
Yeah.
That car particular, because I was shopping for one years ago. And it's heavy. The hood is heavy. The doors are heavy.
Yeah, when you open that hood, you feel it. I mean, it's not a lot. And of course, nowadays, they can make a tenth of the weight.
Oh, yeah.
Stronger than the steel. That it can't, way stronger. You know, 10 times stronger.
Right. Safer.
And safer. Yeah. So, that's important as well. Next in our list here is the 71 MG MGB GT. Say that fast. MG MGB GT. Cool little car. It's bronze yellow over black. 45,000. Gotsta. It has the British Heritage Trust Certificate, which is kind of the birth certificate of the car.
Ah, you know. And that all British cars come with for the most part. I know Jaguars.
Yeah, you can get them on Jaguars, you can get them on Range Rovers, you can get them on MGs, ACs, I think.
Got like Triumph.
10 years of receipts on this thing.
Yeah.
And it's got some updated stuff. It's got new front brakes. It's lowered a little bit. More for ride and reliability. And it's hard to fault somebody when they want to do that to a car because some of these are uncomfortable to drive without a few little modifications.
Sure.
Maybe different shock absorbers, maybe a different bushing, maybe a different sway bar, maybe different tires and wheels, better brakes. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be able to stop. It's kind of important.
Technology's come a long way.
It has come a
long way. Six mechanical drums.
Yeah. Yeah. That, how about that auto bug that we brought in?
Yeah.
It's got its own little braking system.
Yeah.
It's, pretty interesting as well, too. Next up is the 1863 Roper Steam Carriage. Now you say, Stuart, why on your website does it say 1890? Because that's as far back as our website.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's just a matter of something to fix, but it's something we just never think about.
Yeah. Nobody lists cars prior to 1890.
Yeah. What are you going to get prior to 1890? Not very often. But this one, the Roper Steam Carriage, beautiful oak and maple. Built by our buddy up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a working example, very early rack and pinion steering.
Wow.
But Sylvester Roper, the guy who invented the steam carriage, and this is not a steam carriage like it was back in the day, but he built one of the earliest vehicles in 1863. I mean, think about that. An 1865 version is in the Henry Ford Museum in Michigan, and it's touted as the oldest surviving American automobile out there.
Yep.
So if you get a chance, go on our website. You can see that and the others. Last but not least, 1964 Ford Galaxy 500 XL. Raven black on black. Long-term ownership. This thing's been garaged. It's got the 352 four-barrel, the Cruise-O-Matic. It looks like a jet-age car, certainly for the masses. And these things are really, I mean, you're talking about heavy.
Mm-hmm.
This thing is,
yeah.
This thing must weigh 2 tons at least. Not unlike the Honda CRX that I had back in college. It weighs like, I don't know, 1800 back. I think that my Honda CRX back in the day had 100 horsepower.
You had a CRX?
Yeah. Huh? SI.
Oh, wow.
Raven red with a 5-speed.
High end.
Yeah. That was, and with black cloth interior.
Okay.
I don't think you can get leather.
Right. No.
But you talk about a bulletproof car. Sorry, 500 XL. We still love you. We love the 500 XL. The 88 Honda CRX SI was probably one of the greatest cars I ever.
Mm.
Wow. There's a throwdown.
Yeah.
It was bulletproof.
Mm.
It was a blast to drive. It was cool looking when you were young.
Yes.
You were in college.
Right.
And especially being in the red. And it knew how to get home, too. So
sure. That's important when you're young.
It was Rio red, and I had Raven on my brain. I love that CRX. And
they were everywhere. Like everybody had one.
Remember the yellow one?
Yeah, yellow, white.
Yellow, white, black.
Yep.
Black was a good color on those. That little 5-speed was just flick of the wrist.
Yeah.
And the clutch was easy, but I tell you, that thing would go. And then, of course, you know, Honda came out with the Del Sol, which was after the CRX. And then, of course, it all evolved into the S2000, which we were talking about last week.
Okay.
I mean, it all kind of, small sports car-esque, you know, obviously the CRX didn't have a hard top. It wasn't a convertible.
Right.
Which would be interesting to see one in convertible. They'd probably be awkward.
But they're used now. Like, tuners still have them. Like, you see them at car shows once in a while. Tuners show up at Cars and Coffee.
But very rarely do you see them. And they made a bunch of them. There was one there was just a handful.
Other than LA, they were everywhere.
Yeah. Because they were affordable.
Mm-hmm.
The gas mileage was good. They were fun to drive. They were like a hardtop Miata,
mm-hmm.
if you will, or, you know, something that was still fun to drive. But, I mean, I think I put almost 190 or almost 200,000
miles
I put on this thing. And it was, I put one battery in it and three sets of tires. I think that was all that I ever did to it.
Mm.
Added oil and, you know, did the oil thing like you're supposed to.
Yep.
And it was pretty amazing. Honda cars back in that era were amazing. And, of course, none better than a 91 in the Acura NSX.
Oh, sure. And the Accords, some of the Accords had four-wheel steering.
Yes, they did.
That's so right.
Have you seen a new Accord lately? Those things are pretty unbelievably well done.
Right?
Bigger.
Yeah.
But, you know, amazing car, but you forget about it because kind of all cars are kind of amazing. And, you know, I mean, as far as reliability, as far as drivability,
sure.
As far as all that, there's not many bad cars out there like there used to be. You know, the other thing we were talking about the other day, which is so funny. Do you remember the do-it-yourself dent popper?
The do-it-yourself what?
Dent popper.
Oh, the dent popper. Yeah, the glue? Yeah. The apple? Apparently those work to an extent.
Yeah, they worked about as well as a headlight defogger. They just polish this on your headlight and it'll clear it right up.
Oh, yeah.
It never did that.
No, that's the first stage thing with 3 grits of sandpaper.
And a big buffer.
Oh, yeah, big buffer.
And, you know, you got to put the car up on a tilt.
Tape it all off and everything.
Tape the whole thing. I guess they maybe do work now.
Yeah, they better.
They better. They can't just keep charging that stuff, right? So next week we've got, on the show, Judy Strope.
Oh, super.
I'm so excited to have her on. And she and I have been talking about doing this. We run into her a lot at car events and different functions that we go to. And she's just amazing knowledge about the history of racing. And she was a timer. She literally was manually timed cars. And they say she could keep time for, you know, 20, 30 cars in a 24-hour race. And how she did it, nobody knows.
I mean, well, it sounds easy, but it's not.
Oh, it's not. Trying to time a car each lap exactly, get it right.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. But we're excited to have her on. We'll have some lively conversation with Judy next week on the Classic Auto Mall show. We'll talk to you then.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall show with your host, Stuart Howden.
Executive producer Steve Saffir. Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit PatTravers.com. Produced by Car Smarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.